Live from the Commodore Grill, Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield, Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, your Tennessee Ford dealers, proud sponsors of Vanderbilt football. Commodore Hour starts now. Here are your hosts, Andrew Allegretta and Kevin Ingram.
Well, welcome into another edition of Commodore Hour on this Monday night in the Music City. What a beautiful day we have had. We are at the Commodore Grill inside the Holiday Inn West End, Vanderbilt. Coming up on our show tonight, about a half hour from now, head coach Clark Lee will be with us. We'll talk about football after a tough day on Saturday against Wake Forest, and looking ahead to NIU coming up this weekend. We'll make the trip north for that game to finish up non-conference play. In the more immediate future, Coach Darren Ambrose of Vanderbilt soccer squad will be with us. They are having a terrific season, have made their way through the non-conference schedule 6-0-1. So Coach Ambrose will come up in just a couple minutes here. A couple other notes. Don't forget the baseball event with the Nashville Predators, the Smashville Showdown, is 1 week from tonight, and that'll be a 6 o'clock start over at Hawkins Field. Home Run Derby and softball game, and we're going to be there for that. So come on out and see us. It's going to be really cool. The Preds and the Vandy boys working together on that event, the Smashville Showdown. Fall training officially opens October 18th. The team will host Samford on October 23rd for a fall game. Then head out to Las Vegas to play Arizona State on October 30th. The black and gold game will be Sunday, November 13th. Men's basketball, the SEC schedule has come out since we last spoke. You can find the details at vucommodores.com. The SEC season will begin January 3rd, South Carolina, here at Memorial Gym. Don't forget the opener for the season, November 7th, against Memphis. All the details at vucommodores.com. Congrats to men's golf. They won the season-opening event down at St. Simons, the Frederica Cup, by 3 strokes over Oklahoma. William Mall got his first career individual win by 1 stroke over his teammate Cole Sherwood. No bogeys in the back 9 for Mall. He birdied 4 out of the last 6 holes, and the team had a terrific round 2 and got the win over Oklahoma. So congrats. No big expectations for men's golf, and off to a great start here. We're going to talk soccer when we come back. 6-0-1 for Coach Darren Ambrose's team. He will be our guest when we come back as we get things started on Commodore Hour, live from the Commodore Grill at the Holiday Inn West End Vanderbilt on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. We're back on Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us from the Commodore Grill here in Nashville. Kevin Ingram alongside Andrew Allegretta. Our first guest tonight is head coach of Vanderbilt's soccer program, and they enter SEC play now at 6-0-1 after a 4-0 win against Middle Tennessee on Sunday over in Murfreesboro. Reagan Kelly scored 2 goals in the first half. Kate Devine made 4 saves in recording her 4th shutout of the season. Team's only allowed 1 goal in 7 matches. That was in the draw against Lipscomb last week, and now LSU will be next to open up SEC play next Sunday at noon. Coach Darren Ambrose, welcome in.
Thanks, Kevin. It's always always a pleasure to join you.
Brought a special guest as well as part of our live studio audience.
Yeah, she goes with me everywhere now.
Oh, yeah? I guess a little about yesterday's match. How good was that to put the finishing touches on the non-conference schedule?
Yeah, I think we went into the game with an agenda to level the score from last year when they upset us at home, and a lot of kids on the team who carried that with them for a year. But it was nice to finish out the non-conference play with a pretty convincing win.
Reagan Kelly scored 2 more goals. Is she one of those players that once she starts to see the ball go in the net, those goals are going to start coming in bunches?
Yeah, I mean, scoring goals is an art form, and there's a fine line as well with confidence, because you can miss a couple and suddenly it goes the other way. But the way she's playing right now, it's not just scoring goals, she's a provider for everybody else. And we've got other kids stepping up around her because there's so much attention on Reagan now. Mm-hmm. And she's learned. Last year she tried to solve it by herself all the time, and she realized she couldn't solve it by herself all the time. And I think this year she's doing an incredible job of bringing other people into the game, which is making us far more dangerous in the final part of the game, in the final third.
She's a terrific passer too, isn't she? It seems like all her passes are just like right on target.
Yeah, she's I think it goes in practice too. When she gets in front of goal, she rarely misses. Her percentage is pretty high. Her pass completion rate's really high. She's dangerous anywhere within 20 yards, 25 yards of goal.
you like the balance with this group with so many players capable of scoring as opposed to last year where it was maybe a little more limited?
Yeah, I mean, I think Reagan led us last year with eight goals. And it really was about shutting down Reagan. And when that happened, we were, you know, we were kind of a bit one-dimensional. This year, I think we've got four, five, six kids who have scored already, if not more. And part of that is balance. And Reagan's providing for others, and others are providing for Reagan. So I think it's hard to stop when you've got more than one dimension to you. So,
you know, for those who might not be as familiar, your back line of defenders are unbelievably experienced. I mean, Ella and Maya, Ella Schamberger, Maya Antoine. How do those two sort of set the tone for the entire group?
I feel like they've been here for like 15 years.
But if players are going to be here for 15 years, those are two good ones.
They are two of the best. I do think we've probably got, you know, two of the most experienced central defenders in the league. Ella's played every single game but one in her 4.5 years now. And Maya came into her own and really showed the experience she brought to Vanderbilt. And she was injured early in her career, so she had to sit for a little while. I mean, she's played in a World Cup, U-17 World Cup for Canada, and her quality shined last year, and she's just grown and grown. I think the two of them together are pretty special, to be honest with you. And you add in the kids on the side. I mean, Abina Adu from Cal is a fifth year, incredible athlete. And Alex Wagner, who's grown through our program, playing at left back, you've got really a pretty seasoned back line.
Kind of curious if you could kind of set the table for us, because you have your first SEC match coming up on Sunday.
Yep.
It's against LSU.
Yep.
I know you're focused on your crew right now, but what have you learned through the first couple of weeks of the season about how the rest of this league is starting to look so far?
I got to be honest with you, Andrew, I don't pay much attention. That sounds kind of silly. I mean, I just focus on our kids. And one thing I like about this group is we go, okay, here's the next game. What do we need to do better than we did last game? And when they've been given the challenge or they've been asked to make changes, they've done it every single time. So we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. I think we will want to do that. I will say this morning, I did look for the first time really at the league in terms of results and things like that, because that's where we're going next. But it's silly for me to start doing that, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, because frankly, that wasn't important. What I have learned is that the entire league, out of about 150 games, have lost about 17, which tells you the depth of this league this year is pretty special.
Let me rephrase it out of just pure curiosity. At what point in the season do you start digesting more information about not just the next opponent, but the league as a whole? And I guess in context, right, of because coaches are focused on the opponent in front of them, the team that you've got.
Yep.
When does it start mattering for you as a coach, and what have you learned as the head coach here about when you can expand your vision out?
I mean, it did start this week. It literally started this morning, and we're looking at LSU, and then you start to look at the East and kind of how they've done. I think the East is probably better than it's been in a while. Some coaching changes that took place in the offseason, and I think every squad has strengthened themselves significantly. So it starts now, and as we get into that first weekend, you know, we've all got opening games this weekend, and you start to see a little bit more of a shuffle, and you start to see the level and start to see who might be, you know, coming out of their non-conference in better shape than you thought they were, because the field is so, the margin is so narrow in our league, that the first games will give you a better picture of what maybe the rest of the year looks like.
The physicality ramps up too, does it, when you get in these SEC games? It's totally different.
It's I mean, non-conference is great, and it gives you some confidence. It gives you a chance to examine the tactics you're employing. It gives you a chance to look at some younger kids. And then it ramps up about 300%. And then we talk all the time. We pride ourselves on being tough, and I think we've been known for a while to have some fight and some spirit. I think that's something that I would expect from us every game.
Yeah.
There have been very few games this year where we didn't. Arguably Lipscomb, I think Thursday, we for about 45 minutes we weren't like that, but generally this year we've done that. So we'll be ready. Our kids play up to that level. We're more than prepared. We take pride as well in how we go about doing that, and having some fight and some spirit, and our competitive nature is, I think, among the best. So I'm not too concerned about that when we start up SEC play.
I want to ask you about Lipscomb real quick. 1-1 draw last Thursday. How did that match actually help your group?
I think it was, well, I'd take it back further than that. We went into preseason against Alabama and we got punched in the face, and the response was fantastic. We went in and we thought we were good and we got smacked, and the response was, you know, we won 5 straight. And so I think it's the same thing. Lipscomb are a well-coached team. I have a ton of respect for Kevin and what he does there. They're a really good team. They're very underrated. And we knew it was kind of like the local, it's like local rivalry. Everyone wants to beat you, the team to beat. Yep. And they came in, and I don't think we approached the game the right way. And we scored early, which was dangerous, because we suddenly were up 1-0 after 7 minutes, thinking we're going to win by 2 or 3 probably. And we took our foot off the gas, and credit, it lit a fire, and Lipscomb responded. But at the end of the game, our kids were disappointed. We tied the game. We'd given up one goal this year, and it was on a set piece, which we've already addressed and fixed, and which was a great opportunity for us to learn that we are vulnerable and we don't pay attention. But I think it was more recognition that we can't just take our foot off the gas. We've got to fight back, and they did that. We held on. Disappointed though, because our standards are a bit higher, and they just didn't reach them that day. So I think it said a lot about them as a group. And the response was yesterday.
Yeah,
missing a couple of kids from injury was like nothing changed, and they rolled right in and did what they do. So it was fun to watch.
Coach Darren Ambrose is our guest. We're going to have more in just a moment as we talk about Vanderbilt's outstanding soccer program, 6-0-1, heading into SEC play with LSU coming up next. This is the Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us inside the Commodore Grill here in Nashville, inside the Holiday Inn West End Vanderbilt. Coach Clark Lee coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Andrew Allegretta alongside him, Kevin Ingram. Coach Darren Ambrose from the Vanderbilt soccer program is our guest. 4-0 win yesterday against Middle Tennessee, and LSU will be the SEC opener coming up on Sunday. Before we talk a little more about soccer, wanted to ask you about the passing of the Queen. Yeah. And for a guy from Sheffield, England, you've lived in the United States a long time, but did you feel the pull of home a little bit, when you heard that news the other day?
Yeah, I really did. And it's hard to explain how that feels. It's a part of the national identity. I'm still close with my family. And I still remember the day that Princess Diana died, believe it or not. I remember where I was. I remember walking into my wife in Memphis, into the home, and I was actually in tears at that point. A little older, a little further removed, but still, it's an enormous day, and 90% of the population in England have only ever known her as a monarch. So I think it was a big day, and it's a really sad time in the country right now. And talking to my family, and everyone's just kind of a little taken back by it, to be honest with you.
And you'd seen her a couple times in your life?
Yeah, when I was a kid. But more recently in Edinburgh, we were on vacation, and just by dumb luck, and we saw a load of people running to this area, and it was one of the state homes down there, and she was inspecting the color guard in the yard, and you kind of peeked through, and it was like this magical moment, like there she is. It's got that there's a sense of pride. She's represented the country through thick and thin, and done it with such grace and humility that you ultimate respect for her.
It surprised you at all they postponed the soccer matches?
No, I don't think so. I don't think people underestimate. We probably underestimate the level of respect and the power that she had in the country and how she was viewed. It's a really big loss for the country.
Sure.
And I think there's a genuine sense of grief and mourning right now.
Back to your squad. We talked about some of the other players. Your situation with the goalkeepers is super solid. Kate Devine's been excellent, kind of the veteran presence. Sarah Wojcicki has shown that she's more than capable, hasn't she?
Yeah, I would say we're really, really fortunate that either one of those girls right now could start. And at the beginning, we had Wojo in, and to her credit, she's grown from last year leaps and bounds, and she put a lot of pressure on Kate this year and was rewarded with starting a couple of games. And we have confidence in each one, so does the team. And we're fortunate to have that. I think a lot of schools have got a bona fide starter and someone they see in a second or third role. And to be fair, Alexa Giannopoulos is not far behind as a freshman. She's still learning from those two, but feel really comfortable with both of them.
I do want to take a second and put a spotlight on Kate. And I know she's an upperclassman, so she's not new necessarily, but she's a local kid. She's from Brentwood.
Yep.
What's her story? How did she come to Vanderbilt? How has she grown? Tell us about the personality of Kate Devine and how she's contributed to this program over the years.
So Kate came to one of the first ID camps we did when we arrived here. So we've known her since she was probably 12.
Yeah.
And she would come to ID camp after ID camp and game after game. And watching her physically mature from a little girl, 12, 13-year-olds, to the athlete that she's become now is kind of cool, to be honest. Rarely do you get to see that journey and be a part of that for so long. Obviously, you get them at 18 and they graduate and go off and be adults. But to see someone come all the way through like that is kind of cool. Personality, probably one of the goofiest kids I've ever been around. She is such a caring, thoughtful kid, sensitive, great sense of humor. I mean, she's a locker room leader. I think people gravitate to her. She's got time for everybody. Kind soul, competes hard, wants to do her best for everybody, and spreads herself really amongst the team. But she's every coach would want to have a kid like that on the team. She's a super, super kid.
Off to a great start, a 933 save percentage for Kate, the Brentwood product, which kind of leads me to my next question, too. You talk about all of these wonderful positive attributes from a student athlete.
Yep.
What's it like coaching Vanderbilt student athletes as well? Maybe take us inside some of the conversations you have with them, because I suspect at times it's like, coach, I've got homework that I have to get to, or managing their class schedules and their outside interests. There has to be layers and depth to being a coach at Vanderbilt that you get nowhere else.
I mean, the reason I'm here is I love being around kids that are going to challenge you. I mean, I think part of our environment and part of what you want are kids that are going to force you to be better. And that's what I've always wanted is people that are going to maybe prod and ask questions. It makes you stay in tune. It makes you stay current. It makes sure you know what you're doing. You can't get away with anything. These guys are really smart. But they also, they're driven. They're so focused and driven to succeed. A lot of our conversations are about handling when they don't reach their own standards. And their own standards are so high. Honestly, it's so high that they can be doing great and it's not good enough. We actually spend more time in being okay with where you are and trying to keep them buoyant when they're struggling. And some of their struggles are still, from a performance perspective and who they are, they're still way above the line. But because it is such a competitive environment in their own minds, it's not good enough. And they continue to push and drive themselves. So, there's interesting conversations. They're very conscientious. They're on top of everything they do. They do it to the best of their ability. They're great students. They're great teammates. I'm fortunate. I see myself as fortunate in so many ways. At the same time, as I joked about this the other night in our in one of our alumni dinners, that I have an incredible job. I'm watching people and helping people transform people into responsible adults. But then I look at it and I ask people, if you had to pay your mortgage and feed your kids on the attitude of 30, 18 to 22-year-old girls, would you do it? And everyone else suddenly changes their mind. So, but they are a really great group. And this particular group is special. There's something to them as a team that I haven't seen in a while. It's just really, every day you go to practice with them is really an honor, to be honest with you. It's been a really fun year so far.
Is there a student athlete in your time? And if you don't want to have to put someone on the current team on this particular marker, perhaps an alumnus who challenged you the most, that you knew they were going to come to you with something that you just knew you had to be prepared for? And what were those moments?
No, there's a couple of kids. There's one who is not actually Vanderbilt now, but she challenged me in every way. She pushed me to the limit of as far as I could. And I got a phone call from her one day, driving home 5 years after she graduated. And she called and said, coach, I just want to apologize. She said, I know I gave you help for us. She said, and now I'm trying to coach and I have, you know, and so on. She said, I must have been a nightmare to deal with.
And it's funny how that flips once they become coaches themselves.
We laughed about it. But there's a couple of kids on the team now, and I joke, we talk a lot with Kimya. Kimya is incredibly bright, and she's got strong opinions about things, and she and I talk a lot about all kinds of topics, and we find ourselves agreeing on things and disagreeing, and then we agree to disagree on things, but she's not afraid to come in and have tough conversations and interesting conversations. You know, she's always got, something's going on in the world or something in her own world she wants to talk about. She's one that's going to come in and chat and is not afraid to hold back. but she does it in such a respectful manner, and she's open-minded as well. She's willing to listen, which is part of growing in education, right? That's what you want.
Did you learn how to maybe deal with like the experience you have here at Vanderbilt during all your years at Penn, where you're working around, really intelligent student athletes there too.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I've spent my career, I think, I was at Rhodes College in Memphis, which is a tremendous school. But I've also been at UConn and Florida State in between. And then 15 years in the Ivy League and obviously 7 years at Vanderbilt. And there's a reason I think that I belong. I'm at home in an environment like this. I think it reflects my own values. Education and knowledge is something I've always, that's always appealed to me. Took pride in my own studies and in my own education. I think my wife and I have raised our kids in the same vein and with the same values. So I think being in a place like Penn, it did prepare me absolutely. Knowing that these kids are focused, they want to be a pro. They can go be a pro soccer player playing at Vanderbilt. Sure. We've got multiple kids that have done that. But also knowing that, you know, my job is to help them or to help facilitate what they want to become. It's not tell them what they want to become, or it's to facilitate what they want to become. And that is the privilege that I have. And sometimes it's a tough, it's a tough privilege at times, but it is. And helping them become what they want to become, and knowing that they've got goals so much bigger than the 4 years here, and helping them see a path and how they can get there, and preparing them for what's going to come in their life and the challenges that they face. They're facing them now. They just don't know it. Yeah. And they're having to overcome them and work their way through them. And that's part of what we do. And I think that, again, is part of the joy of the job.
We went on a tour of the new Geodis Park a few weeks ago, and Dean McConaughey, I give him a shout-out. He put together a really nice feature on it. How cool is it to see that facility in this town?
Yeah, it is fantastic. I mean, I've been in several MLS stadiums in my time, four or five at least, and it is by far the best. Not a bad seat in there. Even the concessions, everything about it is amongst the best I've been around in my time. Hoping that, you know, John Ingram is listening, that we're going to get to play a game over there. I talked to him on Saturday about that, so, you know, stay tuned. But, yeah, it's awesome to have that relationship, too, that we have with those guys.
I talked to him on Saturday, too, so we'll see if we can pull that off.
We'll pull it off.
I wanted to ask you real quick before we let you go. We're going to have a writer's night here and some live music when we're done with our show. They do it every week here. One thing I learned about you that I thought was really interesting is you're a fan of, like, old outlaw country, which is, you know, I kind of grew up listening to that with my dad, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, for a guy from England, I tell this story frequently. I'm not embarrassed to tell it either, but my dad was a country, in England it's called country and western.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a house that listened to Waylon Jennings in particular and Kenny Rogers and all those guys. So I grew up listening to that music as long as U2 and all the UB40 and all the others, but outlaw country music was my thing as well. So I, you know, listening, coming out here, all the jokes used to be made. Oh, you're from England. You're going to handle country music. And then I rifled off a bunch of titles and some lyrics, and they're like, oh, so I give my background. But yeah, it is. And I feel at home. It's almost like a weird, strange connection to my dad.
Yeah.
Just because I know he's still in his bedroom in England, and he's got a little recording studio. I've got three CDs in my car that he's made of covers of songs that we would all know. So just being here, it's an extra connection to my dad, who's so far away.
Best song in that genre. Sorry, Kev. Or best artist in that genre.
Waylon Jennings is still, I think, I would have to say. And, you know, I would go Waylon Jennings.
Yeah. Yeah, best song of his then, or your favorite song?
Well,
of
the cover he did is "You Picked a Fine Time to Leave Me, Lucille." I just couldn't. I still come back to that one all the time. Yeah. I don't know why, but for some reason that kind of stays with me.
See, I thought you were going to say Lukenbach, Texas, or, you know, something like that.
Like that one too.
Yeah.
I do like that one too.
I like the Highwaymen too. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Coach, great to see you. Thank you so much.
I'm fine with this conversation. Yeah, I could have done 30 minutes of this, too.
Coach, thanks so much. Good luck against LSU.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That's Coach Darren Ambrose. His team 6-0-1 as they begin conference play against LSU coming up on Sunday over the VU Soccer and Lacrosse Complex. Coming back with Coach Clark Lee in just a moment on Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back inside the Commodore Grill here from the Holiday Inn on West End. Andrew Allegret alongside Kevin Ingram. In just a couple of seconds, we'll have head coach Clark Lee stop by. We'll talk about the Wake Forest game, turn the page a little bit to Northern Illinois, Kev. But while we wait for coach to walk through those doors, which would be in just a couple of seconds, they did put out the Home Run Derby matchup for next Monday, which is where we will broadcast this show. We'll take this show, quote-unquote, on the road, 12 feet up the road to Hawkins Field, where they're doing a Preds versus Vanderbilt Home Run Derby for charity. They did just put that out. You've got Matt Duchesne on one. You've got Colton Sissons on one, alongside Parker Nolan, Jack Bolger, and Ken Seals. That is one team, including a few others. You've got Tanner Janot. You've got Enrique Bradfield Jr., Ryan McDonough, Cal Hewitt, Jordan Wright, and Sasha Washington on another. So you're talking about men's basketball, football players, baseball players, and the Preds going head-to-head in a Smashville Showdown Home Run Derby coming up next Monday. Make sure you get your tickets. That's the 19th. That is a charity event, and we are very much looking forward to, again, taking this show 12 feet on the road over to Hawkins.
Do we get to take any swings in this thing? I mean, that's...
You know, I've been told that in the past you've taken a couple of hacks in these home run derby.
Hacks might be accurate.
That's right. That's my golf game as well. So I think we can swing it, Kev. I think we'll do our best. Biggest takeaways for you as we step aside. We'll have Clark Lee step back, I should say. Clark Lee will be just here. In a second, Wake Forest. You saw some really good things. Ray Davis ran the football exceedingly hard. You played fairly competitive football for the first chunk of that ball game, and then some turnovers crept in, yeah. And then Wake Forest kind of flexed the fact that they are the reigning ACC Atlantic Division champion. They flexed those muscles. What were your 30,000-foot thoughts from Saturday?
I think the biggest takeaway for me was turnovers will kill you, and that had not been a problem for Vanderbilt through the first two games, and not turn the ball over at all. But those three led to 21 points for Wake Forest, and with a team with the caliber of offense they have, you can't give them those extra opportunities or give them a pick six or something like that. I got to give props to Wake Forest offense. It's really impressive to watch the way Hartman runs that thing, the slow mesh. He just holds the ball as long as you possibly can and then makes a decision. I mean, that part of it was pretty impressive to watch. They're a really good team. One thing I appreciated about Vanderbilt's effort was how the Commodores kept playing hard all the way to the end. And I understand that, you know, from a coaching standpoint or a program standpoint, that's what's expected. But they were still working hard all the way deep into the fourth quarter. The game may have been out of reach, but still working to try to get some things done. I thought you saw some good performances. A.J. Swan, a couple touchdown passes for him, and getting extended playing time there in the second half. So you had some individual things that stood out, but I appreciated how hard they played all the way to the end, even when, you know, it was a tough day and the weather was bad and all those things. But 45-25 was the final, but still you got a good effort, I felt like.
Congratulations to A.J. Swan, the starting quarterback from Georgia. The quarterback from Georgia that came in for Mike Wright gets his first career touchdown pass. Gavin Schoenwald, the local kid, gets his second career touchdown reception. You can look forward to Northern Illinois coming up on Saturday. That game kicks off at 2:30 Central Time. Our coverage across the Vanderbilt Sports Network will start at 1 p.m. That is a team in Northern Illinois that's 1-1 so far. They've got kind of a close win against an FCS opponent on their ledger, but they just lost to Tulsa 38-35. Having said that, that is your reigning MAC champion from a season ago. They beat Kent State in the championship game. They return a lot of those pieces, and it's a road game for Vanderbilt. So I think everyone inside the building, and certainly us up here, would expect a very close, competitive, tough game for Vanderbilt on the road this weekend.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And any time you go on the road, there are those, you know, challenges to just go with playing away from your home stadium. They'll probably be stinging a little bit from the way their game ended against Tulsa the other night. They fell behind 17-0, came back in the fourth quarter to lead 28-24 and 35-31. Then Tulsa scored inside the last minute and won the football game. They beat EIU in their first game 34-27. So it's a program that's been a good program for a long time. And, you know, they played in big bowl games and everything else. So, I mean, they know a thing or two about winning football games.
Clark Lee will be here in a couple of seconds. We'll step aside, talk with the head coach for Vanderbilt football, Clark Lee, on the Commodore Hour after this across the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Game day is full of ifs. Like if Vandy can take home another bowl game victory. Who knows? But if you want the most convenient way to pay in Vandyville, get the Vanderbilt University Regents Visa debit card. Tap to pay contactless card technology and locket card controls give you what you need on game day or any day. To order your card, visit regents.com/anchordown. Regents, official bank of the SEC. Member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Commodore fans, you may not think of yourself as an athlete, but every day life is full of athletic feats. You bend, you reach, you lift, you twist until back, neck, or shoulder pain hits, which brings you to a stop. So whether you're an athlete or not, The Joint Chiropractic can help ease your pain and keep you on the active list. Visit any of our 20-plus Nashville area locations or thejoint.com today to get your first consultation, exam, and adjustment for just $29. The Joint Chiropractic, official chiropractor of Vanderbilt Athletics.
The Foundation has been here for 100 years. This is Vanderbilt Football on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Whether you need a single in-town pickup or international travel arrangements, you can always expect unparalleled reliability and comprehensive service from Grayline Tennessee Black Car. We take pride in offering the highest level of white glove service, whether you're looking for group or individual transportation. Use code VANDY when you book your Black Car service and receive 10% off. Learn more and book today at graylinetn.com or call 615-714-5466. Grayline Tennessee Black Car. Be driven.
Time to redo this basement?
Yeah, a home gym, movie theater, model train utopia.
Or yoga studio?
I'm flexible-ish.
Great, I'll just use the U.S. Bank mobile app so we can plan it out.
Which way are you leaning, setting a savings goal or applying for a home improvement loan?
I say we look at both options, right here in the app.
Budget for a really good home gym. We deserve it.
Noted. Help for today, planning for tomorrow. That's what U.S. Bank is for. U.S. Bank. We'll get there together. Equal housing lender member FDIC.
Welcome back inside the Commodore Grill. Andrew Aldergretic here alongside Kevin Ingram. Pleased to welcome the head coach of Vanderbilt football, Clark Lee, to the program here for the final 20 minutes of our episode here tonight. We'll talk quickly about the Wake Forest game. We'll try to preview some of the Northern Illinois game coming up on Saturday as well. Coach, pardon me for jumping in with 2 feet, but I'd like to jump in with 2 feet here today. I know a lot of the talk for, I think a lot of us, whether internally or externally, look, the focus is on the grand scheme of the ball game, but I know those moments on the sideline with a couple of hits on the quarterbacks were a talking point. What was the explanation that you received, whether in the moments or after the ball game, as to why those plays differentiate?
Well, you know.
welcome to the show.
Yeah,
sorry to
this
jump in
good.
With 2 feet.
Yeah,
I know
good.
We've got limited time, so here we go.
I don't know that I left much room for explanation on the field, I'm afraid. At least that's what my wife told me. We felt like the hit on Mike warranted a flag, and I was going to fight for that. I'm going to fight for my team and fight for my players, and that's my job, you know. I felt like the emotion of the sideline needed to be redirected back towards play on the field. And so that was the conversation we had as a team afterwards, was just, you know, let me fight the battles that need to be fought with the officials or with those kind of game operations elements. And you guys stay focused on your performance. But, you know, I think it was unfortunate that, you know, that they penalized us, but not the opponent. But sometimes that happens, and we don't control everything in performance. And certainly, you know, that's a situation where we don't have control over the flag being thrown or being held. And so we got to move on from it. And that's what we've done. For me, you know, that's an opportunity for me to fight for my guys, and I'm going to do that.
My second, let's jump in with 2 feet question for you. It would be, look, Wake Forest came out obviously and prepared well for Mike Wright's running ability. They changed the way that he played quarterback, unlike the first two games. What lessons were learned either for Mike or about how teams might want to scheme against Mike in the future?
Well, we're seeing this, and I think it kind of came out of the Elon game too in the second half. But, you know, teams are obviously keyed on him. They're loading up the box. You know, that's leaving us some one-on-ones on the perimeter. We just haven't been able to, you know, to hit the throws, and we have to do something to loosen the box up. You know, that's going to be, you know, Mike's a dynamic player, but, you know, in the end, I mean, if they have someone accounting for him, it makes it challenging. And so we have to find those kind of alternatives within each play that allow us to spray the ball on the perimeter, to loosen the box, that allow him to get going, and really honestly allow our running backs to get going too, because I think when you see, you know, nine guys kind of, you know, at the line of scrimmage, it doesn't just negatively impact Mike's ability to run. I mean, that also is taking, you know, 12-yard gains and making them 4-yard gains for our running backs. And so we have to, as an offense evolve forward. You know, we have to find those opportunities to get the ball out and spray it around and get it out in space to our other playmakers and, you know, facilitate their success as well. So that, you know, that's been the big learning, and those elements are both in design and in execution. So there's shared ownership over that between, you know, coaches and players.
Ray Davis had a good day. What did you like about the way the offense got the ball in his hands in various ways and just let him go
to
work?
By the way, I want some sort of like – we need like a contractual thing where, like, clearly I get to be the guy that takes
good cop back.
Yeah,
cop.
Right. Like, yeah. I'm the bad cop. And yeah.
That's good.
I'm accused of being the good cop at home, too. So I'm used to this role. But yeah. But for Ray, he did have a good day. What'd you like about his performance?
Well, he's strung together, a couple of really gritty games. You know, it hasn't always been clean. And, you know, they're, like I said, those extra hats that we're not accounting for are getting tighter and tighter to the box. And so, the spaces are collapsing rapidly. I thought the way we started that game, just as a program, you know, I was pleased with in terms of just the competitive intensity and the defense coming up with a stop, you know, the offense, you know, separating the box on the first run. Yeah, that was a huge play. And we need to, you know, again, just keep the pedal down on that drive, find a way to get that ball in the end zone. We weren't able to do that. But Ray's been a tough running, fighting for the hard yards. He's really shown up. He's shown up catching the ball too, which has been great. I thought he made a great catch on the sideline on a back shoulder throw, which was big. And so, hey, he's a good player, you know. And again, as we find ways to loosen that box up, I think we're going to see him be able to find even more yards out there for himself.
It was a rough day for Mike Wright, and he watched some of the second half from the sideline. But I got to think, if there's a player who could handle it as well as it could be handled, it's probably him, given his personality.
Yeah, he's resilient. He believes in himself. And, Mike's a competitor, and he wants to be better for the team. And, in the end, it's shared performance, you know, whether it's in design again, which is the coach's ownership, or on the field, you know. It takes 11 people to make a play work and to make sure that we're, you know, moving the direction we need to move. And the quarterback, you know, often gets too much of the scrutiny. We need to allow him to move on and move forward and keep growing forward too.
Well, asking a question on the other side of the football, the defense. Wake does make it tough with that slow mesh offense. They run it really well, and Sam Hartman's a terrific quarterback. What were some of the trouble spots there that you saw out of your group?
Well, I felt like we were, you know, the goal was to make them line it up and snap it as many times as possible. And so, you know, obviously the three and out to start the game was great. I thought the second drive, which was coming off a KOR, that it was an explosive. They got it to midfield and then kind of they were able to methodically march it down. And that's not a bad thing. You know, Wake wants to outscore you. So for every second that they have the ball and they're not in the end zone, that's cutting against their strategy. They took it all the way to the goal line, and we made a goal line stand. It was an awesome moment for us. And that's a moment to me where our program, in a winning effort on Saturday, seizes the momentum there and let's go drive down and score. And unfortunately, the subsequent possession on offense was a great job, you know, getting the ball out from the goal line. But then, you know, the ultimate third down throw was the pick six, you know, and that's a brutal shift, and that set, you know, a sequence there, that the pick six then was a three and out, then was a one play touchdown.
Yeah.
When our defense went back on the field, and then was a fumble on our offense, and then they scored again. To me, when I look at the defensive film, you know, what I'm considering is, you know, what fell within our strategy and what didn't. And when you talk about one play touchdowns against Wake Forest, that's what we can't do. And so we were, you know, the receiver got behind the defense. The Hartman made a good throw, and for us to be competitive in that game over four quarters, which I think our defense had the energy and spirit to do, we just can't let them go on one shot to the end zone.
I got a couple of fan questions, and one of them was tethered to this, you know, whatever. One of them was tethered to the quote-unquote how aggressive is Vanderbilt defense. perhaps a simplistic question, but part of the question was, how much does Vanderbilt blitz? But then on top of that, what does it mean to be aggressive to you, right? Because there's more to just blitzing to be aggressive and how it fits in with an opponent's offensive style, matchups, corner pressure, all that sort of stuff. So how much do we blitz, and how do you perceive your desire to be aggressive on defense?
Aggressive to me is a couple things. One is certainly when you blitz or when you pressure on, first and second down, you're being aggressive against the box. And so it's a chance for you to to pull the trigger and actually have your guys trying to control momentum at the line of scrimmage. You can be aggressive at the line and not blitz too. Some of our short yardage stops and our fourth down stops haven't been pressures. They've just been low pad level, vertical knockoff, second level players slicing the line of scrimmage. And sometimes that can be just as effective. When you blitz and you move, a good offense can collect that movement at times, and that creates issues with, vertical seams. And so Wake was good at doing that. We did blitz quite a bit. The other thing about blitzing and the other aspect of pressure that I think is important to understand is the way offense is designed anymore. When you blitz, teams aren't just handing the ball off into your blitz and, and congratulating you after the fact. You are compensating somewhere when you add people into the rush. And, at times for us that was, coverage on the edges. Maybe we're zone dropping rather than playing a bracket or playing a man. And so you relieve pressure on the perimeter, which allows for access throws. And Wake was really good at that too. And I thought at times they were able to establish rhythm and drives because they were throwing it where we weren't. Maybe we were being aggressive in certain areas, but they did a nice job of countering that. And a good offense is going to do that. The goal then becomes just let's rally and tackle, and eventually we'll get to our stop. Outside of that, so you have the ability to be aggressive in the box. Aggressive on the perimeter means you're playing to me, man coverage, bracket coverage, which is just essentially like a form of double teams.
Right,
and then,
right.
or you're in a cloud coverage in your corner, you have an idea that they're wanting to run the flat route and your corner is going to leverage it. That's an aggressive play. And variation between those options becomes what good perimeter defense looks like. So that's the goal. And then lastly, third down, we had a third and nine in the first drive of the second half, and we pressured, which left a man coverage one-on-one on the field edge. And it was a 50-50 ball that they caught, and we got a pass interference call on it too. So sometimes in those situations, again, you always want to be able to blitz because you have to be able to shorten the down for the quarterback. He has to know that there's a possibility that he's going to get hit. And in the end, over time, that'll disrupt his timing, disrupt his ability to function. But when you do pressure, you lose the ability to double routes. And so you leave yourself with more one-on-ones, which sometimes can allow for an escape valve from that pressure.
Talking with head coach Clark Lee, I appreciate that because, again, it's good to understand there's depth to the word either pressure or being aggressive on defense. We'll step aside, come back in a couple of seconds, about 10 more minutes here with head coach Clark Lee after this on the Commodore Hour.
Wow, what a great game plan. Let's go down to the locker room and see what coach has to say.
Okay, team, let's start using the winning play, 83 green.
Hey, coach, what's 83 green?
That's the number you call when you need heating or cooling service. The guys in the green trucks and air conditioning service, where the customer always wins.
Call 83 green and win with Jim and Chip Red's winning carrier team for more than 60 years. With 83 green, you turn to the experts. Carrier and air conditioning service. Call 83 green.
Vanderbilt Business offers world-class education on a personal scale. We have top-ranked programs for every stage of your career designed to help you accomplish your unique goals. We cultivate a competitive advantage by focusing on individual needs and fostering a collaborative environment where students, alumni, and recruiters interact on a personal level. We develop leaders who add value to every organization they're a part of. Whether you're just getting started in your career or working your way to the C-suite, let us help you take your next step. Visit VanderbiltBusiness.com/anchordown today.
With stars that shined like the neon of our city, this is Vanderbilt football on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Hey, Commodore fans, be sure to shop Nike, Johnny O, and Peter Millar, gifts, and more at the Vanderbilt Bookstore. You are sure to find everything you and your squad need to complete their game day look and tailgate experience. On game day, shop the doorstop, fan store inside Gate 2. Be sure to check out the Vanderbilt University Bookstore, located at 2501 West End Avenue. Open 7 days a week or shop 24/7 online at VanderbiltBookstore.com with option for free in-store pickup. That's VanderbiltBookstore.com. Go Doors!
Summer is here. Will you stay in or get outside? Discover the unique all-new curved display screen of the iconic BMW 3 Series. Weave through the mountains in a stylish BMW X3 and take on even more adventures with your BMW X5 and its ample capacity to store all your gear. Because life isn't meant to be spent indoors. This year, summer adventure starts with a drive. Summer on. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Welcome back inside the Commodore Grill. Coach, we only have about, about 6 minutes to go here in our program, so I want to, again, jump in with 2 feet. A couple of more fan questions here. Just some basic updates on guys like Rocco or Julian Hernandez. And some of the guys have not been able to play the past couple of weeks. We thought we might get Rocco, and then he was unavailable.
Yeah, Rocco was able to practice through Thursday, but just, you know, Thursday evening just didn't feel like he had – recovered to the point where he felt like he was healthy enough to go out there and play. And, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're not exposing him to further injury. So he'll continue his progress back. And I think we take him day to day, knowing that he's made it part of the way, but just has a little bit more to go. Julian Hernandez is progressing. He'll be reintroduced into practice. He did the walkthrough a week ago. But he'll actually start to get some reps and work his conditioning back. And he, too, is day-to-day, seeing how he responds, but we're positive on that. Quincy Skinner was able to play a little bit, but then kind of re-aggravated a soft tissue issue for him that we gotta take another look at and just make sure that we're, you know, on course with that one. So we'll kind of get the word back and see how he can progress through the week. You know, on the whole, though, you know, the injuries are working their way back, and we're, you know, we're getting back healthy. And it's, you know, some of these things are nagging. They just take time. We got to give them a little time.
Got another question about transfers, and I think it comes up at this point in time because we're 3 games in, and you've seen some erosion of the defensive line depth with Davian and Devin and Braden, and a little bit of erosion of the offensive line depth with Julian himself. I know you've touched on this, so I don't mean to regurgitate the same things, but your thought process about how you want to attack, it would be very tempting to just add depth right now through the transfer portal. Why do you want to be cautious with just flat out, let's grab all of the depth that we can get?
Well, we want to optimize the portal for depth where we need it, but you know, we're building a program for sustained success, which means, you know, for every player that you grab out of the portal to add depth, you're going to be replacing that player in a year or two. And when you have a developmental program where you're building systems and maintaining systems or retaining people in systems, it's way more strategic to have someone in your program for 4 or 5 years, you know, rather than two. And so, you know, we want to be smart, especially early, to say, you know, like, let's make sure we're building the roster at its foundation, where we have the ability to retain freshmen to sophomores, sophomores to juniors, juniors to seniors, and then at times even fifth-year seniors, knowing that 4 and 5 years within our systems is gonna give us an edge on the field. There's going to be a higher level of anticipation, you know, a better understanding for what we're trying to do, how we do it. There's also going to be the effect of developed leadership that expedites growth for the new players too. So, you know, the longer you have someone in, the more capable they are to lead the next person through. And then, you know, from there though, it's about, hey, okay, what are the depth issues we can answer in the portal? What are the depth issues that are going to be answered through us developing a team? And you know, I think the portal is always going to be a short term answer because you're talking about a year or two. Sometimes that can be strategic. We want to make sure we're optimizing that as a tool for us. But again, for me, this isn't about, this isn't about the immediacy of the build. It's about the sustained and long-term, sustained success of the program. I want to make sure that we're recruiting freshmen that fit our profile, that that we can grow in our systems and, look up in time and see the team that we've built through that process.
We've got about 30 to 60 seconds left here. And
I don't think I have 30 or 60 seconds as an answer.
So let's go ahead and just unplug coach's microphone.
That's right.
I asked that question about transfers, kind of knowing, too, that the transfers you guys brought in, Miles Cecil is on the defensive line, Jacob Brammer is on the offensive line, so there's that. If you've got it in your arsenal, Coach, a quick thought on Northern Illinois.
This is a team that won the MAC championship a year ago. They're a pro-style offense. They're multiple on defense. This is a program that went through a tough rebuild, and I got to credit their staff and their team. They've really built a nice program. We got to go on the road, so we're going up to their environment, and that adds a layer of complexity to it. This is they're best in class in their league, and so we're not at a point as a program where we can make any assumptions. They are going to be a really good team, a disciplined team with good schemes. They're going to play really hard, and we're going to have to show up and play our best. And I'm excited for the week of prep. I'm excited to see the guys come out and compete, and I know they're going to be hungry to put on a good performance. It'll take everything we have.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Good
thank
to be
you.
With you.
Our appreciate coverage it. Starts at 1 o'clock on Saturday. For Coach, for Kevin, my name is Andrew. This has been the Commodore Hour. We're back at Hawkins next week. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to Commodore Hour. Tonight's episode was brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield, Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, your Tennessee Ford dealers, proud sponsors of Vanderbilt football. The proceeding has been a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.